to be reading from Nectar of Instruction. The reading these evenings often from Nectar of Devotion, which is a book written by Rupa Goswami. This is the second book, one of many books written by Rupa Goswami also. And we'll be photocopy because the book has been out of print. It's going to be in print again. We'll be receiving some from Ratha Yatra.
Do you know about that?
Anyone doesn't know about that? Ratha Yatra is a great on Fifth Avenue. Annually, it's a very large festival. Celebrating one of Krishna's pastimes. Krishna's pastimes. So, that event will take place about a week and a half of the day, Sunday to Saturday, July 11th. Very nice to have you for a community festival. For us, it's the largest public festival in the world. These books will be available.
Time to start.
Pray begins at noon for 59th Street and 5th Avenue. It goes down 5th Avenue straight into the park.
How long is it?
More what? About an hour and a half. Depends on how long the turn out wants to take, but generally, sometimes the canopy is being stuck. There will be only two parts this course. So I'm going to be, can't follow along because you don't have the text for that. So I'll just read the Sanskrit. Atyahara prayasascha prajalpani amagraha janasangas chalo yamcha katir bhaktir vinashati. One's devotional service is spoiled when he becomes too entangled with the following six activities. Number one, eating more than necessary or collecting more funds than required. Two, over-endeavoring for mundane things that are very difficult to obtain. Three, talking unnecessarily about mundane subject matters. Four, practicing the scriptural rules and regulations only for the sake of following them and not for the sake of spiritual advancement. Four, rejecting the rules and regulations of the scriptures and working independently. Musically. 5. Associating with worldly-minded persons who are not interested in Krishna consciousness. And 6. Being greedy for mundane achievements. So, there is long purport here. I'll just read parts of it. Specifically the parts that deal with the first few items. And it's not even going chronologically in order. I'll just be convenient. Human life is meant for plain living and high thinking. The first page and a half is basically a summary. Prabhupada presenting a summary of some basic tenets and positions of Krishna conscious philosophy. Human life is meant for plain living and high thinking. Since all conditioned living beings are under the control of the Lord's third energy, this material world is designed so that one is obliged to work. Now, what this third energy is described. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has three primary energies or potencies. First, called Atharam Shakti, or the internal potency. Second is called the Hasta Shakti, or the marginal potency. The third is called Bhagiranga Shakti, or the external potency. The living entities constitute the marginal potency, and they are situated between the internal and external potencies. Being subordinate as eternal servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the jivatmas or atomic living entities must remain under the control of either the internal or external potency. When they are under the control of the internal potency, they display their natural constitutional activity, namely constant engagement in devotional service of the Lord. This is stated in Bhagavad Gita 9:13. Mahatmanastamam partha dhairim prakriti manshita vajam chananya manaso jyatva bhutarim avyayam. O son of Pritha, those who are not deluded, great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. Point that's being made here, we made in different ways several times throughout the purport. This point specifically that the soul is in a position to be influenced in different ways, to be influenced in favor of rendering service to God, and on the other side, being influenced render activities in forgetfulness of God. But those that are maintaining a position of constant engagement in devotional service to the Lord, there's very special considerations about that individual soul. Here the reference is being made from the Bhagavad Gita verse, that because that individual soul understands that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that individual will always serve Krishna. It's not merely a point of sentiment, it's a point of understanding or knowledge. To acknowledge that there is God, to make a statement, a declaration, I accept that there is God, I believe in God. Obviously, from the behavior of people in general, that's not sufficient to allow them to constantly engage in that service. Something more deep is required. In Rupa Goswami's writings, in other places, there are very extensive descriptions of different stages of spiritual elevation. And this position of constant engagement in devotional service is not readily achieved. It's not easy to attain that stage. But when one is freed from involvement in material, this description is leading up to this first term of nectar destruction, adhyahara, means trying to acquire more than what is necessary. Generally, that's in terms of material possessions or monetary gain. Obviously, someone is so caught up in trying to build up their treasury, their bank balance, if there's a deep preoccupation with that, they're not going to that degree that their intelligence is absorbed in that way, they're not going to be serving God. They're not going to even be thinking of God. Or if, at best, if they are thinking of God, it's in terms of how my dealing with God will enhance my material position. And this is also described here. The word Mahatma refers to those who are broad-minded, not cripple-minded. Cripple-minded persons, always engaged in satisfying their senses, sometimes expand their activities in order to do good for others through some ism like nationalism, humanitarianism, altruism. They may reject personal sense gratification for the sense gratification of others, like the members of their family, community, or society, either national or international. Actually, all this is extended sense gratification from personal to communal or social. This may be very good from the material point of view, but all such activities have no spiritual value. The basis of such activity is sense gratification, either personal or extended. Only when a person gratifies the senses of the Supreme Lord can he be called a Mahatma, or broad-minded person. Prabhupada goes on to describe, in opposite to the Mahatma, one who is always thinking of God and serving God, the opposite is the Duratma, or this cripple-minded person. And the cripple-minded person also has to serve. But they serve improperly or foolishly. So, as a result of that foolish activity, then there is some difficulty they have to endure. And it's describing the different threefold miseries, miseries that are caused by other living entities, miseries that are caused by my own body, mind, and miseries that are caused by the elements, or natural disturbances. These are unwanted, but one is forced to experience them as long as one is in this material, your consciousness, your body. And because the misguided soul becomes so much involved with trying to enjoy this Adhyahara, not simply what God has provided to maintain the body, but to acquire more and more objects or items that can try to gratify the body, it becomes more and more involved in these different miseries. The severity of the misery increases as they become more and more identified with the bodily concept of life. Description goes on that even, of course, for the most part, people are very much involved on the gross physical plane, identifying with their happiness or their sense gratification simply in terms of what they can eat, how they can decorate their bodies very nicely, the accumulations they have that surround them, properties that they can identify as being theirs, their bank balance, their friends, and so on. Home, family. Identified in the same category of something that very much interferes with one's spiritual life is the interest that someone who is very much prone to mental speculation has in trying to increase their fund of knowledge. There's a nice description of that. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, this is Prabhupada's spiritual master, writes in his Anuvritti commentary that too much endeavor to acquire knowledge on the part of the mental speculator or dry philosopher also falls within the category of Adhyahara. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, the endeavor of philosophical speculators to write volumes of books on dry philosophy devoid of Krishna consciousness is entirely futile. The work of karmis, who write volumes of books on economic development, also falls within the category of Adhyahara. Similarly, those who have no desire for Krishna consciousness and who are simply interested in possessing more and more material things, either in the shape of scientific knowledge or monetary gain, are included under the control of Pratyahara. In other words, it's not simply Rupa Goswami is very scientifically identifying very strong material tendencies that keep one from advancing spiritually. As long as one is absorbed in or attached to these materialistic tendencies, advancement is very, very slow and troublesome. Language is very difficult. It's far easier to see this attempt to accumulate or acquire in terms of gross material things. But it is also very strong disadvantage of return to spiritual life if one is very much prone to drive speculation. In worldly circles, someone who is a very prodigious writer and very much acclaimed for so many interesting things that may have been written by travel or just by poetic imagination, they may be very famous and very well acclaimed in the world. But as far as spiritual advancement is concerned, it's just as it's described, shrama eva nikevam, a useless waste of valuable human energy. Actually, at the heart of all of this, there's a nice description found with the references made from Srimad Bhagavatam, where the author of Srimad Bhagavatam describes that the occupational duty of the human being should never be applied for material gain. Everyone has to have some occupation. And sometimes this is a point that often gets discussed at these meetings. But how an individual, just as many of you here working in the world every day, having some activity to perform, how can that occupation be seen in relation to this Krishna conscious message, the message of realizing the absolute truth? This verse of the Bhagavatam is very appropriate, that one's occupational duty should always be have as intent to achieve ultimate liberation. It should never be for the purpose of material gain. And whenever material gain does come, moreover, that should never be used simply for sense gratification. Because in every endeavor, there will be some fruit to that endeavor. So it's speaking in both ways. Don't allow for spiritual, someone interested in spiritual advancement, don't allow the motivation for your activities, your occupation, simply to be accumulation or gathering of some material profit. And whatever material profit does come, because it's unavoidable, that should never be applied for sense gratification. That means understanding our position within God's scheme of things. Prabhupada calls us the Isavasya spirit. That is, found in the God is applying for all living entities. And each individual living entity is allowed to accept their own quota. What is the quota for the elephant is not the quota for the ant. God is providing for both. Very natural. So also, for each of us as individuals, God is making some provision. And we have the provision, we have the right to accept those things which are set aside as our quota, which are intended by God for us to maintain ourselves. And never are we entitled to accept anything else. The thing that allows us to keep that position, to be in that position, to keep that position, those things that are for us that are for them. And certainly those things that are not meant for us, but they're meant for some other living beings for them. If this simple Isavasya spirit, God-centered spirit, could be understood by within some society, then very naturally everyone will have whatever they require. Won't be unnecessary anxiety or extreme wealth within some elements of society and extreme poverty within others. There's so much consideration, practically demand or pressure on the government, the federal government, to balance the budget, rather than so much, and one of the first things to go in that budgetary expenditure is foreign aid. This great nation of America for so long has seen itself as the big brother of the whole world, principally dominating. That consideration should already be there if there is, if God is providing a surplus amount in some place and there's another place where there is a lack, then that should be distributed. This is actually an administrative or governmental duty. Someone who is in that position, administrating over the resources of a nation or any sector, has that responsibility. That's the Isavasya spirit. Recognizing the person who is providing all of these things ultimately is God. And we as an intermediary or servant of God can see that they get properly utilized. Not in some places having surplus, in other places having famine. These are very practical considerations. Within any society, whether it's within family or community, or a group of people, village, nation, very practical consideration also for spiritual advancement. Because when one becomes too much involved with trying to accumulate for happiness, then this next prohibition or severe stumbling block in spiritual progress comes up. Making some over-endeavor to achieve a mundane thing. That's called prayasa. Generally, it's being described here that this prayasa follows the former. From desiring to accumulate, then I have to make something extreme endeavor because it's unnatural. The natural thing is just to accept what God provides. This is a very basic principle of spiritual life. Because as one becomes, there are many religions or religious practices that have as one of the principal tenets that if you, by worshiping God or by following God's law, then you will be happy and prosper in this life, and so many promises are made also for future happiness. It's not an unordinary thing. It's not an uncommon thing. It's described by Krishna right within Bhagavad Gita that there are four principal reasons why people approach God. One of them is that they're in distress. Another is that they want economic relief. They have some economic problem and they want a solution for it. These are very common, age old, not something new and modern, but very essential motivations for people seeking some kind of economic profit gain, by practice of religion of all things, to approach God for prosperity, for their bread, for their things that they want for their own happiness. So, even if one starts with the right motivation, then what that the principle of maintaining simple living, this is the first sentence in the purport that Prabhupada presents. Human life is meant plain living, high thinking. At every stage, one has to be very conscious, scrupulously maintaining very simple standard of living. Because it's a fact that from religious practice, by rendering some favorable activity, sacrificing on one's own behalf for the welfare of others, we speak of this higher principle that the Mahatma operates under, doing all things simply for the pleasure of God. So much opportunity follows. One has to be very careful as opportunity comes, that one accepts this Isa Vajram position, only accepting those things which are necessary for maintaining oneself, and not accepting anything else. Acceptance may be there simply for rendering further service to God. Other people or whatever their subtle interests are. That's a danger in spiritual life. Because the very basic understandings can be achieved, just like in reading Nectar of Devotion. If one needs further clarification, initially when Nectar of Devotion was published, Prabhupada told us that if we didn't understand something, we should simply read it again. And after reading again, that we didn't understand it, read it again. Because there are very many elevated subject matters in the Nectar of Devotion. But the very basic understanding, that's very clear and evident. And as we progress nicely and naturally in spiritual life, these other understandings will become more and more clear. So this is the second item, how one's devotional service or progressive advancement in spiritual life can be spoiled by making some over-endeavor to achieve some mundane thing. The third thing is described is prajalpa. You know, other than the devotees who lived in our temples, have heard them go and speak and use this term. Prajalpa means idle talk. When persons who are serious about spiritual life get together, their talks become centered on what will serve to advance them in spiritual life. Those that are not serious about spiritual advancement, Prabhupada describes this directly in the purport, then immediately they begin talking about anything except that. That does not serve to elevate one's consciousness. Rather, it will spoil your enthusiasm for devotional service. It'll spoil the quality of your devotional service. Therefore, also then, the next item is described, or two items later, jana sangas, the associating with worldly-minded persons who are not interested at all in spiritual life, who are not interested in developing their God-conscious activities.
can also spoil your devotional service. I'm sure it's very easy to see this. When you associate with persons, just like coming together in these evening meetings, those persons who are very attentive in the kirtan and listen nicely to whoever is speaking, they become very much enlightened. It may not even be that you can understand or remember all things, but just that the quality of that association, the quality of the sound vibration is so enlightening. Spiritual. So keeping saintly association and avoiding the association, just the whole opposite effect here, association of persons who are very, very worldly minded or mundane. Even there may be some character about them that you, the quality in their character that you like or you appreciate. This thing or that thing that they can do. But if they're not devotionally inclined, you're shaking your head like that. Was experience. No, you are agreeing.
Yeah.
Thinking of something. Thinking of something particular. I'm sure you can all think of some particular circumstances like that. Or even individuals that are, because they're not serious about genuinely making spiritual progress, they may talk on and on and on and on, but because their activity does not indicate that they're serious about their spiritual advancement, then their association is very troublesome. They don't take the necessary spiritual practices that serve to elevate. They don't take the problem of chanting, or serving, or worshiping, or offering their food, and careful how they associate with others in a devotional way. And there's another section describing the fifth item. Accepting some of the scriptural rules and regulations for immediate benefit, as utilitarians advocate, is called niyama agraha. And neglecting the rules and regulations of the shastras, which are meant for spiritual development, is called niyama agraha. The word agraha means eagerness to accept, and agraha means failure. Two different sounds that just line over the A. In one case, that means eagerness to accept. Without that line, it means failure to accept. By the addition of either of the two words with the word niyama, which means rules and regulations, the word niyamagraha is formed. Thus, niyamagraha has twofold meaning, that it is understood according to the particular combination of words. This is a technical description of how two Sanskrit words are put together. Those interested in Krishna consciousness should not be eager to accept rules and regulations for economic advancement. Yet they should very faithfully accept scriptural rules and regulations for the advancement of Krishna consciousness. They should strictly follow the regular principles by avoiding illicit sex, eating, gambling, and intoxication. This is a point that is often questioned, by, especially in a libertarian environment of modern America and modern New York City, where many persons consider, that freedom means no rules, no regulations. It's just like accepting blindly and rejecting blindly, having blind faith in some in something, somebody, or something, or blind rejection, without any basis for that acceptance or rejection, simply by whim. So by material standards, because so many things are imposed upon me in my growing up or in my middle age or in my old age, whatever stage of life one is in, so many things that unwanted are imposed upon me, therefore spiritual life must be just neglecting all these things that are imposed upon me, and I'm free, I don't accept any restraint. I can do anything I want to do whenever I want to do. And it's certainly, spiritual life is not something that has so many rules and regulations. After all, how could that be spiritual? It's just like all the other material things that are regulating people and forcing them into, you know, if I want to do it spontaneously, that's all right, but no rules and regulations. That's not spiritual. That kind of idea is there. We meet that all the time. You don't understand. Okay. Okay. Here's one. Practical one. Many times people ask, how come your men stand in one place and your women stand in another place? And if you people are so spiritual, then what does it matter? If you're, you know, fixed in your God consciousness, what does it matter if you are with the opposite sex? I mean, if you're not, then you're not very spiritual, right? You're so disturbed if you have to stand next to you and a woman has to stand next to a man or vice versa, then you're not very spiritual anyway. So I don't accept your separation of men and women as being a spiritual rule and regulation that I should follow in my life. Or chanting of rounds. I don't need to, you know, yeah, I chant when I feel like it. And that's spiritual. That's spiritual chanting, not the chanting that you guys do. You have to, you know, take your beads and you're obliged. You have to keep so many counts so many times a day. But how can that be spiritual? That's artificial. So I chant. Yeah, I chant. When I want to chant something else, I chant something else. If I don't feel like it, I don't feel like it. You know, as the spirit moves me. It's an argument against accepting rules and regulations. So this is as much as rejecting rules and regulations is not recommended. Also, specifically what's described here is just following them without the understanding and the desire that both, that this particular rule will help me in the following way. And then, therefore, let me keep that interest in mind while I follow. But just mechanical following, that won't help. It won't bring one to the ultimate conclusion that rule or regulation is intended. But included in your description is the favorable sign. In other words, by the advice that you just gave that theoretical person, you're also saying, this will help you in your spiritual advancement. The prohibition, the imagraha, is if someone simply follows without any real intent, without really desiring spiritual advancement, they're just simply following.
No. Just it's spiritual advancement.
contrast, if I follow, if I walk around in, you know, long sheets and cut my hair in a funny way, like you find in certain places in the city, other than every temple, that in and of itself isn't going to make one's, enhance one's spiritual advancement in any way. And that's the understanding is, I'm accepting this because it will help me in my spiritual progress.
I don't totally agree with that.
Okay, well let's hear your disagreement.
Well, I was listening to a radio program one time, and a specific guy was on the program, and he was saying that the reason why I wear these robes and these towels or whatever those things were that are like hanging from the clothing, he said it's because sometimes I'm tempted to not go to restaurants, and sometimes I'm tempted to do things that are not my fault, and I just have to look down and see my sleeve, and there's something hanging that's an external reminder.
Okay.
Who I am, and it keeps me from going into those non-kosher
rituals. So why is that a point of disagreement?
You're saying that the outer garment doesn't really, and once, you know, it doesn't really make the,
close to my hand.
Yeah, because that's what you said, in a way.
But again, the example that you're giving is someone who is accepting that for the purpose of enhancing their spiritual life. This man, this is what he described is for that reason. It may not be the highest platform of reason, but it's for that reason.
He's not doing it for
him. He has reason. That's his purpose and acceptance. And the other is total disregard for some scriptural direction or injunction or rule or regulation that is meant to help one advance. No, that's not freedom. That's not spiritual. Taking it lightly, just neglect. Because that's a moment-to-moment thing, or over time it can change. That at one point in time, one may, with all earnestness, take up a certain set of things to advance or enhance one's spiritual life. And then later on, due to neglect or whatever, not quiet, very serious. This is the warning. But that can spoil one's devotional service if you neglect. Even if one becomes somewhat freed from material entanglement and somewhat advanced by spiritual realization, that doesn't entitle one to it. Now there is a far more advanced stage. The topmost stage of spiritual advancement. But one is not, rules and regulations don't apply in the same way. The topmost stage of God realization, where one is seeing God everywhere in all circumstances. In other words, the benefit that is supposed to come, the spiritual advancement that is intended from following those rules and regulations, when one achieves that stage, then the rule and regulation does not any longer apply. That's an exception. Very rare, rarely found exception. And even in those cases, individuals will follow, for the most part, simply because they're setting an example for others who will follow their example. They know very well that, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, whatever great men do, common persons will follow. So they accept that responsibility. Accept the example.
Okay.
not from the topmost stage, from very, very, very elevated stages. Yes. When you start filling in all the blank lines, then it starts to get, I'll have to say no.
Well, somebody said something today about bliss from being elusive. And every time you think you have it, it's the illusion. And just go through that. You didn't really have to go off for something that you don't really have.
That knowledge that you're describing is not the same knowledge that people from Adhikari has. Just as it's described here. This, the position of the Mahatma. When someone, it's not very readily, this, the particular knowledge of who is God, when one achieves that position, then that's not the kind of knowledge that you that wisdom that escapes you after some time. The wisdom that escapes you after some time is something that is derived by developing one's mental powers. And you can grasp some very interesting or wise concept, but then it again escapes you. Something that is temporary. Trying to read your facial expression is difficult. Okay, so that we can finish up this one section. The last is greed. Desire to Desire to expand the mind by perfecting mystic yoga, merging into the existence of Brahman, or attaining whimsical material prosperity are all included within the category of greed or bhogya. All attempts to acquire such material benefits or so-called spiritual advancement are impediments on the path to Krishna consciousness. Krishna-conscious devotees know very well that this material world is designed by the complete arrangement of the Lord to fulfill all the necessities of life for all living beings, without their having to encroach upon the life or rights of one another. This complete arrangement affords the proper quota of wealth. This is this Isavasya, my dear. The proper quota of wealth for everyone according to his needs. And thus everyone may live peacefully according to the principle of plain living and high thinking. So this is the starting point and the ending point. Plain living and high thinking. Unfortunately, materialists who have neither faith in the plan of God nor any aspiration for higher spiritual development misuse their God-given intelligence only to augment their material possessions. This is described also earlier, that this human form of life is very special in that, not that the human being is a better soul than the other souls, but with this human form of life, sufficient consciousness and intelligence is provided to reach God realization. This is where the point comes in of the purpose of human life is God realization. Awakening consciousness of God. The Duratma, the unfortunate soul, is one that doesn't use that intelligence for spiritual things. But it's not that that intelligence then just goes out the window. But the intelligence must be used, so it becomes used in all of these other items that are listed here, these six items. They misuse their God-given intelligence only to augment their material possessions. They devise many systems, capitalism, communism, to advance their material position. They are not interested in the laws of God or in a higher goal, always anxious to fulfill their unlimited desires for sense gratification. They are conspicuous by their ability to exploit their fellow living beings. When human society gives up these elementary faults enumerated by Srila Rupa Goswami, all enmity will cease between men and animals, capitalists and communists and so forth. In addition, all problems of economic or political maladjustment and instability will be solved. This pure consciousness is awakened by the proper spiritual education and practice offered scientifically by the Krishna Conscious Movement. One other reference also, and I'll just stop and ask some questions in discussion. The point that Prabhupada makes during early in his purport to the verse is that it's very important for the beginning of spiritual life to understand the general sense of duty to God or dharma. That meaning what your occupation is. So much of our time in the course of each day or each week is some kind of occupational activity. And even if someone is on welfare, they're doing something with their time and energy. So what is the proper application of that time and energy and consciousness and intelligence and speech and possessions that come, fruits that come from that occupation? Very basic to the beginning of spiritual life is training in this regard. And someone who has difficulty understanding how their occupational endeavors have a place in spiritual life, if that is not clear, then advancement is very troublesome. There's sometimes, or you know, the earlier stages of our movement, there is this well understood phenomenon that many people thought that our Krishna consciousness movement is just the shaven headed monks, and you know, I may appreciate what Prabhupada's writings say, but what does it mean to my life? You know, I can respect, appreciate, but I can't participate, which is wrong. Actually, everyone's occupation, not just a certain segment of society, everyone's occupation is meant to be performed for the satisfaction of God. This is Varnashram. It's the very fundamental basis of Bhagavatam's message. Bhagavad Gita's message also. Arjuna's not invited by Krishna to give up his duty, but rather how to see his duty in relation service to God. How to see your work, how to see the energy that you're expending each day as that which is favorable service to God. That's at the beginning of spiritual life, spiritual progress. And as society can begin more and more to understand that principle, then society will become more and more in general, more and more elevated. Progressive spiritual. So there's a lot of information here, maybe there's a point of discussion.
Two points. First one is an example that you use as far as US foreign aid goes.
As far as what?
US foreign aid.
Yeah. the point is that the Prabhupada's emphasizing here in the purport, whether they keep it or they give it away, if it's simply for their enhancing their economic position, which will then later be used for sensual gratification, then it's a waste of time. Whatever energy they was expended by the American government, it's a waste of time. That's not to say that by worldly estimation, that's very nice. Some people benefited by the handouts of the American government. But from a spiritual point of view, it's a waste of time. The intelligence of the human being, the intelligence of the leaders of society, the energy of the persons who are individual members of this nation who are paying their taxes to arrange for the government to do all these things, share in the stupidity, and share in the lack of spiritual progress for themselves and for humanity. But if the very same activity is done with a God-conscious understanding, God has provided all these things, we have our quota, and it belongs to God. And therefore, we have the responsibility on behalf of God to see that it gets properly distributed. It makes everything ultimately different.
The second thing is, members of the congregation, oftentimes the example is given that for a married
funding.
spiritual point of view, yes. From a material point of view, no.
Well, I take issue with that. Because I suppose the people that you sent it to, you know, by some quirk, you know, your intention wasn't to send it to them, your intention was to do harm as opposed to good, and he was going to be good, you know. He usually does. But suppose it does for you, it's the good hands. And the people whose hands are sprinkled into it won't end up, you know, leading a better life. You're putting rice in the stomach of children who, you know, would have died and wouldn't have known about, you know, prayer or meditation. And suppose that, you know, those seeds dropped to nurture somebody who, you know, wouldn't have the chance to worship prayer. First, then you preach, you know, the gospel. Then you, you know, I mean, the missionaries, that's the smartest thing that the Christian missionaries do in their world. You know, they feed people, and then they get the mind and the soul.
They're called rice Christians.
Huh?
They're called rice Christians.
Yeah, yeah.
They say Christians are rice.
Rice. I'm asking him to respond here.
Well, in the material world, there are pious activities and sinful activities. But giving in charity is considered a pious activity. A sinful activity is one that causes harm to others. A pious activity is one that relieves. Giving a foreign aid for relief of material distress is quite effective. And it leads to material rewards according to the law of karma. It's like if you do something bad to someone, so you suffer a reaction according to the law of karma. If you do good for others, you enjoy a reward as a result of that action. So, giving a charity or giving a foreign aid is highest activity. But devotional service is actually beyond both highest activity and simple activity. Because devotional service does not bring any material reaction. Suppose a person is very pious materially, and still he has to take birth again in the material world, enjoy the results of his pious activity. If someone engages in devotional service, which is transcendental, he doesn't have any material reaction. Doesn't have to take birth either to suffer the bad results or to enjoy the so-called good results.
All right, not everybody's going to understand that, though. I mean, you're talking about government debt. Isn't it better that at least they remain pious? Faith, capable of harm, I guess.
I never said they should remain pious. He's not able to understand what he speaks in different ways according to the body.
Teach them, you know, and I'm talking about doing it without an arrogance. Okay, I'm doing it like, I'm not saying that a person with white skin privilege going into a black neighborhood. I'm just thinking like a black person going into a black neighborhood, an oriental person going into an oriental neighborhood, or, you know, just for the argument's sake, let's say a white person going into a black neighborhood, trying to, or sort of like what the Jewish movement did for the NAACP. It's like, you know, the Jews were very oppressed for a very long time, and they got it together, and they used their oppression and their persecution as a way of, like, standing up for themselves in a way that was a mirror for reflecting their importance. In other words, if they hate you enough, then there's got to be some reason why you should live. And I think, you know, Hare Krishnas do this thing at the same time. They get persecuted, you know, for being different or whatever, and there's, like, a certain kind of gift in that persecution, in that oppression. So that's another issue. But so someone goes into a black neighborhood and says, and tries to round up people and suggest that they fight against racism in the world, and they get the kids off the drugs, push education, and
what's the point?
Okay, the point is that they are taking people out of the ghetto situation and putting them in pinstripe suits so that they're becoming realtors now. And if they're realtors and they're like, you know, going into a world where they're going to be living in gentrified neighborhoods, and they're going to reap the fruits of material possessions. Okay, they're going to reap the fruits of living in the temporal world. Now, is that negative? Is that not my spiritual good? Is it better to let people live in the oppression of racism or whatever they're persecuted for, or to show them that they don't have to accept that, and they too can, own a co-op in Scarsdale?
Here's what Srimad Bhagavatam says about what you just described. All occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. They should never be performed for material gain. Furthermore, according to sages, one who is engaged in ultimate occupational service should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. Life's desire should never be directed towards sense gratification, which should only desire a hearty life or self-preservation. Since a human being is meant for inquiry about the absolute truth, nothing else should be the goal of one's works. I can elaborate, but I think that hits the nail on the head. There's a verse in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, Abrahma Bhuvanal Loka Purnar Arvartan Orjana. From the highest material planet down to the lowest, all are considered undesirable places to be, because therein there is repeated birth and death. Which is basically the same answer as he was given. You can consider by material standard one is better. So it's an act of kindness bring someone from what you described to what you described. That, according to the Vedic conclusion, is dismissed. Speaking learned words, as Krishna is telling Arjuna, very similar kind of reply. You're speaking learned words that are very respectable in ordinary circles. However, from a spiritual point of view, you're missing the point. You're misidentifying the self to be the body. And the soul remains entangled in repeated birth and death. Unfortunately, the real problem of life is never addressed. The temporary problems are alleviated somewhat, certainly not completely. It's not just elevator and steps in this case. It's a question of benefiting the body, saving a drowning, for example. The example that Prabhupada uses is, a drowning man is calling out for help, and you very gallantly swim out and take the man's jacket and bring it back to shore. Because you've misidentified the individual with his garments. So unless spiritual understanding is focused, you know, in the forefront.
Suppose the jacket was going onto a rock that was holding it down. Suppose. I mean, is that not better? I mean, it really is the elevator and the steps, I think, or something like that.
Well, by taking the steps that you're describing, one can reach Brahmaloka. However, Krishna says that is also a place where repeated birth and death will take place. You can't build the stairway to the spiritual world. That kind of step won't work. It's the struggle that you're in. Each of the different examples and scriptures that you come up with have to do, they all come back to the misidentification of the self with the covering of the self. So, for certain, from a material point of view, you're right. But as equally, for certain, from the point of view of the spirit soul that must, after all is said and done, again take birth in the material world, again get diseased, again get old, again die, again is suffering the different miseries that come from being in a body, that other living entities also influence to bring suffering, and the natural elements also bring unwanted miseries. What have you done to alleviate? Those are the real problems of life. This is the point of knowledge that, or wisdom that doesn't escape you once you have it. You're here for the first time, yes? You have some point you'd like to bring up? Second time. You can follow everything we've been discussing?
Yes. Awesome.
Not so much.
I have to get up.
There are three kind of stages of the realization of the true personality of God.
What's interesting is that that verse in the Bhagavatam comes right after.
Something that I was praying with exactly.